This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Joe Palca, Ira Flatow's away. Later in this hour, we'll be talking about the science behind 6 degrees of separation. But first, a look at the scientific legacy of Judah Folkman. Dr. Folkman died last week. He was 74. Dr. Folkman's work on how blood vessels form in tumors changed the way doctors think about and now treat cancer. It also led to innovations in the treatment of eye disorders. Joining me now to talk about Folkman and his contributions are my guest. First, Robert Cook is a science writer and the author of Dr. Folkman's War, Angiogenesis, and the Struggle to Defeat Cancer. He joins us from WGBH in Boston. Bob, it's good to talk to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Also with me is Dr. Larry Norton. He is the Deputy in Chief of Breast Cancer Programs at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. He joins me here at NPR's New York Bureau. Thanks for being with us today, Dr. Norton.
Pleasure to be here.
So let's start with you, Dr. Norton. What was Judah Folkman's thinking that sort of changed the conversation in cancer?
There's two parts of that. There's his ideas and how long it took his ideas to get accepted, and I think both those are important parts of the story. Judah was a pediatric surgeon, and he was very impressed operating on tumors in children, how vascular they were, and that tumors had a very rich blood supply, and not only that, but that the blood vessels seemed to come in from a lot of different directions, where normally organs get a very discrete, well-defined blood supply, usually from a single vessel. And he thought that maybe the answer to cancer was not to attack the cancer cell itself, but rather to attack the cancer's blood supply, and started to study why cancers induced this abnormal blood vessel growth. And that led over many decades into the field that we have today.
If you'd like to join our conversation, our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And if you want more information about what our topics this hour, you can go to the website www.sciencefriday.com, where you'll find links to our topic. So going back to this question of this blood supply, I mean, if tumors have this increased blood supply, maybe this is the benefit of 20/20 hindsight, but if you say, well, if we can cut off the blood supply, maybe we can, you know, destroy the tumor, doesn't seem like that far out of an idea.
Well, a lot of things seem obvious after they're established.
Right.
I think that's the essence of a lot of things in science. The important part of that is that cancer specialists, both clinically and in the laboratory, were intensely focused on the cancer cell being the primary problem, and attention to not only just the cancer cell, but a particular aspect of the cancer cell, which is its mitotic division, the division of the cancer cells. And that led to an awful lot of research concerning abnormalities in mitosis, and led to 99.9% of the drugs we now have to treat cancer are drugs that basically attack mitosis. So considering that the problem with cancer may not just be the cell itself, but its relationship to its environment, and the blood vessels being a component of that environment, that was not in the mainstream of thought, and therefore it was not pursued.
Bob Cook, you talk in your book about, where this idea first comes from. Can you, relate where this sort of began to emerge into Dr. Folkman's thinking?
Well, Folkman saw a phenomenon when he happened to have been drafted by the Navy and was working in Bethesda, Maryland in a laboratory, and he and his colleagues finished their assigned job much too early and had plenty of free time. So their captain said, well, do what you want in a laboratory. So they got some cancer cells from across the street at the National Institutes of Health and tried to grow them in this special apparatus where they were testing substitute blood supplies for the Navy. Turned out when they grew these cancer cells, I think they were black melanoma cells, they grew up to about, maybe 1 or 2 millimeters in size, and all of them stopped growing at the same time. And Folkman said, well, that ain't natural. They must be telling us something. They can't grow beyond a certain size for some reason. There's a barrier there. And he spent a couple of years thinking about that and doing experiments and realized that if they can't get a blood supply and call in enough to keep growing, they can't grow beyond a certain size because the nutrients and oxygen can't flow across tissues unless the blood vessel is really close.
Huh. And one of the things I think they made this observation, but this at this time in his life, his training was he was a surgeon. I mean, normally we don't think about surgeons getting down to the cellular level anyway. Was that unusual?
Well, that was one of the problems, because most of the cancer specialists in the world thought surgeons didn't know anything but how to cut and sew. Folkman was a master at both, but he also liked to consider himself a surgeon scientist, and he learned a lot of science somewhat by doing, but he was a learning machine. He soaked up information like nobody I've ever known. He's always taking notes. He was always underlining the important parts. And so his idea to the cancer specialist seemed both too simplistic and naive. And they said, oh, that what you're seeing is just inflammation and not blood vessel growth. So it took a long time to prove his four main points.
Dr. Norton, I guess, you know, that's an interesting point. How important is it that Dr. Folkman was a physician in terms of shaping his thinking, do you think, about his science?
I mean, I think it was very important, but there is an even bigger overarching theme here that I think is very important for people listening to this to understand, is that contemporary science is very reductionist. The whole concept is to take a very complex phenomenon and try to find single components that can be studied meticulously in the laboratory, removed from the real phenomenon. What Judah was doing was starting with the phenomenon, was starting with the tumor growth and with the observations about blood vessels and then the manipulation of that as a phenomenon in the laboratory without necessarily driving to the molecules that were causing it primarily, but studying the phenomenon itself. And this is not typical of the contemporary view of the way science should be conducted. So it was not only his training and his background that made him stand out from the crowd in terms of pushing his ideas forward, but also there was a major philosophical difference, and that philosophical difference still exists.
People are listening to this show together, or they're joining together in Second Life at the Science School. I think that's the right place. And we have somebody who's written in the name of Positin Drake, who says, is the increased amount of blood vessels seen in all tumors or just in cancerous ones? And that's an interesting point, Dr. Norton.
All tumors. Including tumors of the blood vessels and blood cell blood-forming tissues. You even find that in cases of leukemia, which we think of as starting in the bone marrow, that there is increased blood supply. It's universal.
So what does that say, I mean, about the difference between the blood vessel recruitment of a benign tumor, let's say, versus the blood vessel recruitment of a cancerous tumor?
Well, indeed, that may be the thing that transforms a benign tumor into a cancerous tumor, is its ability to produce blood supply. And where approaching this as a community from a variety of different directions.
Okay. You know, Dr. Folkman called that the angiogenic switch, because when that switch is thrown, it starts drawing in the blood vessels.
And, you know, we think, Bob Cook, a lot about this being primarily related to cancer, but Judah Folkman got into other areas, particularly something called macular degeneration.
Well, he was an observer of connections. He loved to connect the dots and find out how things work together. And what he was talking about was vascular biology. You can have too much blood vessel growth or too little blood vessel growth. And in macular degeneration, it turns out there's a little bit too much blood vessel growth in the retina itself, which destroys the retina over time and makes people blind with macular degeneration. So some of the medicines, such as Avastin, that's made by Genentech, are now being used in very, very tiny doses in the eye, and people who are getting these treatments, or at least some of them, can resume reading, watching television, and driving when they were legally blind. I think that's a revolution.
That is remarkable. Let's take a call now. You can join the conversation by dialing 800-989-8255. And let's go to Nathan in Louisville, Kentucky. Nathan, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, fellas. How's it going?
Good.
Yeah. Still vertical.
I was just wanting to ask a question to your guest regarding all this talk of tumors and blood vessels and development. You guys have been mentioning about how these tend to recruit blood vessels that are nearby. But my question was, if the blood vessels being present and all of that blood going to one area seems to be a result of the tumors, could that also possibly be a cause of the tumors? In effect, too much blood vessel development in one area could help increase the chances of tumors developing. And could that be related to other cancers in parts of the body that are particularly known for abnormal blood vessel development?
Interesting question, Nathan. Let's ask Dr. Norton what he makes of that.
Well, not in a simplistic sense, but actually in a much more complicated sense, it actually is very relevant because one of the things that induces blood vessels the best is inflammation. When you have an infection, you have to deliver blood to that area to allow white cells to get in there to heal the infection. And infections tend to attract blood supply as well, and that's why they get red and that's why they get raised. And there's a very strong connection between inflammation and cancer. Indeed, every prostate with cancer in it has evidence of inflammation. Every breast with cancer in it has evidence of inflammation. So the connections between inflammation and cancer are very real, and the blood vessel growth is something that they have in common.
Bob Cookman. Go ahead, Bob.
One of the things that Dr. Folkman and some of his colleagues used to say is that cancer is very much like a wound that will not heal. And so it keeps on putting in new blood vessels. It's growing and trying to heal. So, and about the distant metastases or other cancers, the arrival of new blood vessels provides an avenue through which tiny cells from the cancer can migrate to other points in the body and set up these other tumors. So they are related, but as Dr. Norton said, in a very complicated way.
And I just want to be clear, the drug that Genentech makes, Avastin, that's not the same as these drugs that Dr. Folkman was pursuing in the 2000, or the angiostatin and endostatin, right?
That's correct. Avastin is an antibody, an artificial molecule made by Genentech that blocks the action of one of the blood vessel growth stimulators, VEGF. VEGF is the problem in the eye, and it's one of the main stimulators that tumors use to draw in blood vessels.
Okay, well, we're going to have to take a short break. Oh, before we go, I just want to say that the Second Life is on the Science Friday Island that's in the science school. So if you're confused and wandering around and you're on Second Life and you're looking for us, that's where to look, Science Friday Island. But right now we have to take a short break. We'll come back and talk more about Dr. Judah Folkman and some of his influence on the field of cancer research. So stay with us. I'm Joe Palca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. From NPR News, this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Joe Palca. We're talking this hour about Judah Folkman and his contributions to cancer research. My guests are Robert Cook. He's the author of Dr. Folkman's War, Angiogenesis, and the Struggle to Defeat Cancer. He's joining us from Boston. And also with me is Dr. Larry Norton. He's deputy in chief of breast cancer programs at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. And one of the things that, Dr. Norton, I want to ask you about is Judah Folkman had some of these ideas, as Bob Cook was describing, when he was a very junior person in, I guess, the early 60s or mid-60s, and now we're talking about, you know, 2000. This is 40 years of research. Is that typical?
Actually, it is typical. What's atypical about it is the fact that he persevered over that time and that he had a vision and he kept pursuing it, kept working on it, kept talking about it, and eventually, slowly, the community came over and saw the validity of it. And I think that's a very important part of the story because many people have very good ideas, have real insights, and if they can't get support for it, grant support or peer support or community support, they abandon those ideas and they move on to other ideas. It turns out that Judah was totally right. I'm part of an organization called Breast Cancer Research Foundation, and we gave him an award, actually one of our first awards over a decade ago. And he was intensely appreciative of that because it actually was community recognition for his ideas, which were just then beginning to be accepted.
And Bob Cook, you write that a lot of his early funding wasn't from federal sources at all, but from industry.
Well, not so much. Well, he had industry. He was the one who got the first big grant from industry into Harvard, and it really touched off a fuss at Harvard because, one, the university didn't accept patents or want anything to do with commercial income, and that led to changing the whole policy at Harvard and most other universities in the country as the biotechnology revolution was taking off. And, of course, a lot of people disliked Folkman for that, particularly at the time. Now they love it. But Folkman, when he was, when I asked Harold Varmus, who was formerly head of the National Institutes of Health, about Folkman, he said the first time he'd heard of Folkman, I think it was back in the 70s, he said Judah Folkman was described as this guy in a hair shirt working on an island in Boston Harbor, kind of really off the mainstream.
Interesting. Let's take a call now, and let's go to, is it Abu in Stillwater, Minnesota?
Yep. Earlier in the show, you guys were talking about tumors, and I had a question about that.
Okay.
If I heard right, one of your guests said that there are chances of a benign tumor turning into a cancerous tumor, and I needed to know a little more about that. What are the chances, and how likely is it that that a benign tumor will turn into a cancerous tumor?
Interesting, Dr. Norton.
I will take my answer off the phone.
Okay, thank you.
Right. Okay, yeah, it depends upon the organ that we're talking about, but that most of us have some elements of benign tumors in our bodies at all times. Why they suddenly become malignant, by malignant we mean that they grow larger, and especially that they can invade into surrounding tissue and they can spread to other parts of the body. That's one of the key questions that we are wrestling with right now in cancer research. And clearly the ability to start to attract the blood supply is part of that. In the breast, ductal carcinoma in situ is a benign tumor that is found very, very commonly. And most of the time, it doesn't do anything, but occasionally it does convert into a malignant tumor. In men, there is something called PIN, which is a prostatic benign tumor that is very common as men get older. Indeed, most men over age 50 and 60 have some evidence of that, and that also can stay totally benign for your life or can convert. So this is one of the really important topics in modern cancer research.
And now, go ahead, Bob.
Dr. Folkman has pointed out several times that autopsy studies and automobile accident victims show that almost everyone has these little tiny pinhead benign tumors in the thyroid gland. So it's not uncommon, but what causes it to switch to a malignancy is still not known. It has something to do with oxygen starvation, but they're still working on that.
Bob, in the book, again, you describe a couple of individuals who were quite remarkable, successfully treated with some of these angiogenesis inhibitors, angiostatin, endostatin. How far along in general have these drugs gotten, do you think?
Well, they're really doing very well. I was at his laboratory this morning. Of course, Judah Folkman isn't there, having died 2 weeks ago. But the research is continuing at terrifically rapid pace, and some of the angiogenesis inhibitors that he found are now fast approaching the clinic. At first, when they were introduced in about probably 2000 or 1999, the toxicity tests suggested that there might be efficacy, but not enough to get people to get excited about, so they have never made it to the clinic. That may soon change.
Dr. Norton, is that your understanding? I mean, are these drugs, not necessarily specifically these, but drugs based on the controlling blood supply, is that likely to become important in treating solid tumors?
Well, it's actually already important. Uh-huh. The drug Avastin, or bevacizumab is what it's called, is actually already in use in the clinic in several diseases, and we're studying in other diseases. There's about a dozen drugs in development, including the drugs that Bob just mentioned, that are being developed right now that are rapidly approaching proper clinical trials. Of course, we have to learn a lot about them, toxicities, the right dose, the right schedule. There's a lot of work that's yet to be done. But without question, the fact that we have at least one anti-blood vessel drug that's on the market and that is helping people controlling the cancers indicates that Judah was right. This is an important target.
But I guess this is, I guess, the question that I want to get at it, and it's very hard for me as a journalist to talk about Judah Folkman's work without thinking about a famous New York Times article which quoted Jim Watson as saying Judah Folkman is going to cure cancer in 2 years. He obviously didn't do that, and maybe it was an over-the-top comment even at the time, and intentionally so. But the point is, how big of a contribution is this? I mean, is this going to – I mean, are 20% of cancer victims going to be saved, lives saved, or is this 5% or is it 50%? I mean, can you say how big of a contribution these will ultimately be?
Well, of course you can't. Right. You know, it could be huge. It's certainly a contributing factor, but let me tell you something about it that is huge, which is that work – shifted the attention of a very large segment of our community, and the entire cancer research community acknowledges the importance of this, shifted it from just the cancer cell to the relationship of the cancer cell and its normal environment. Many of the blood vessel cells that form these new blood vessels in cancers are coming from the bone marrow. Indeed, some people think they're all coming from the bone marrow, and they're circulating through the system, getting to the area of the tumor, and that's where the blood vessel growth really starts. And it shows you that cancer is not just a disease of the cancer cell, but it's a disease of the cells that are around the cancer cell, indeed the bone marrow and the whole body. And that change of focus is huge. And that the implications of that are really enormous for understanding biology, and unquestionably are going to help a lot of people, and many of us believe will lead to the cure of cancer.
Okay. Let's take one more call now and go to Terry in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Go ahead.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Hi,
to the program.
I have a question. I was listening regarding the increase in vascular tissue and oxygen to tumor growth, and I'm wondering, is there any sort of inverse relationship between anemia and tumor growth? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Norton, anything about anemia and cancer growth?
Anemia itself does not make tumors grow faster or make them grow less, but often cancers actually can cause anemia. There's an anemia of malignancy that we sometimes observe. So the cancers are actually sending out signals throughout the body for the body to produce fewer red blood cells. And again, it indicates that a cancer is not just a lump of cells that are just sort of growing, but they're related to the whole body.
Okay, let's try one more. Sorry, Bob Cook, go ahead.
The picture that seems to be emerging is that a tiny tumor reaches a certain size and can't grow without more blood, which suggests it's starving for oxygen and nutrients. And when any organ in the body is starving, it sends out a signal, send me more blood, send me more blood. And that may be part of the angiogenic switch that makes the body start sending in new blood vessels.
Okay, one final question from Jim in Indianapolis, Minnesota. Indianapolis, Minnesota, is that right? Did I say that right? Indiana?
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
There we are. Okay, Minnesota, welcome to the program.
Nice to be on. I have I run a company here, and I've just returned to work after eating my lunch after I had my Avastin treatment. I'm in 10 years, and I've been blessed with doctors that are really thinking outside the box, resources like the Lance Armstrong Foundation that help me find the new treatments. And Avastin is working against the high grade. My tumor has shifted from a lower grade to a higher grade, and I'm using it in combination with several chemotherapy agents. And I'm blessed I'm responding. From what I understand, I've been following it for a long time, that this was really creative research that people weren't supporting for a long time, and it's really, you know, for me personally, it's making all the difference for me, and I'm getting back to work, and I've got a family. How do we encourage people to do this creative research that seems to be not favored? It's just more of the, if you have specific research that is just making incremental progress, may not be the huge breakthroughs like this.
Well,
how do we encourage that, and how do we encourage people to get into clinical trials to do these sort of things like I have that are really making the difference?
Well, Jim, we wish you good luck, and thanks for that really interesting question. Bob Cook, go ahead.
Yeah, the problem is if industry can't see a huge profit in it, they're not going to invest in something that doesn't look like it's going to work soon. Years ago, there was a representative came through the Folkman lab, popped his feet up and lit a cigar and said, okay, what do you got like in the bottle in 6 months? Well, it doesn't work that way. And the anti-angiogenesis treatments, when they give them to patients, don't cause a quick reduction in tumor size. It takes a long time to drive it into what you might call dormancy. It is not a quick change, but it is a very, very profound change.
Okay, Larry Norton, we give you the final word on this.
Yeah, well, this is a big topic, and I'll try to do it as succinctly as I possibly can. Thank goodness for industry, because industry right now supplies almost half the money that's in cancer research in the United States. If you add together all of the money that all Americans spend on cancer research, philanthropy, government, and industry, it's only two-thirds of what Americans spend on tobacco advertising. And so if you really want more advances, you've got to prime the pump. It's got to be supported. And if there is enough activity, then some of that activity will truly be creative. When you have an environment where people are starved of research funds, they're not going to be very creative. They have to be very conservative, or they're going to lose their funding or not get their funding. And so if we really care about cancer research, Americans really have to get behind this. And I hope all our presidential candidates hear this message.
Okay, well, we have to leave it there. I'd like to thank my guests for this segment. Robert Cook is the author of Dr. Folkman's War, Angiogenesis and the Struggle to Defeat Cancer. Also joining me was Dr. Larry Norton. He's the Deputy in Chief of Breast Cancer Programs at the Memorial Sloan Memorial Cancer Center here in New York City.